Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Okay, everybody, we'll spend with the introduction here. So, can't believe that it's March 25th, right? We're almost there. I got to play that disclaimer prior to coming on the air because people complain sometimes. You know, I don't like to deal with the complaints. Right? And again, we're going to share a lot of news. A lot of people, they're innocent, they'll proven guilty and everything else. We had a lot going on last week. Let's just say that we worked through the weekend on one of my clients is a European company. They're coming into the United States, and we are right. It's a company you have heard of and you may have used, and they are doing work in the United States, and we're getting together their safety program, their safety plan for the United States. We're going to be doing some safety audits with them and everything else. And now, European way of doing things is a lot different than the American way of doing things. Yes, safety is safety. You know, you have the hierarchy of controls that may be formalized or informalized. Yeah, you have this. You have exposure limits. You got that. But there's a lot of things that the Europeans do a little bit differently. So, for example, what is often managed in the United States by a health insurance company. So you work for a company and you have a health insurance company, like how to manage stress and education on stress and things of that nature. In Europe, and it's starting to be managed a little bit more in-house and in the workplace, but in Europe, it's like managed by the work, by the employer, and they take an interest in your stress. I mean, that could be good, that could be bad. I mean, you look at some of the stuff on Instagram or TikTok, Facebook, and it's like, well, you know what? I get paid from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., for example. What I do outside of that, none of your business. In Europe, maybe not so much, right? We're talking about mental health issues and things of that nature. Well, guess what? Got to be very careful in this country because you have laws protecting people with different illnesses and things of that nature, the Americans with Disabilities Act and what have you. Not, you know, so, you know, you got privacy issues there with HIPAA and it's a legal mess over there. I'm not an expert on European stuff, but obviously they run things a little bit different. Now, a lot has gone on since we've been in the on the air last week. I mean, a lot has gone on in the world, and we're going to be talking about that. And now, some other regular safety news here. Boeing CEO to step down a management shakeup as manufacturing issues plague story plane maker. This story is out of Ohio, Dave Koenig. But it's not the Dave Koenig that's the listener of this show here. Leadership shakeup at Boeing, including a news Monday that its top executive plans to stop down, highlights difficult path facing the iconic aircraft manufacturer as it tries to navigate through yet another safety crisis. CEO David Calhoun has been under unrelenting pressure since a panel blew off a Boeing 737 MAX jetliner during a January flight, said he would retire at the end of the year, said the decision to leave was his and the timing would allow for an orderly transition. Several other people are left and everything else. There are two crashes of 730 MAX planes, one in 2018, one in 2019, and a door blew out. And I mean, there's all different reports on there, all different kinds of reports on what went wrong here. They're with like credit cards trying to check things out. The door that blew off, one of the doors had four missing bolts. There are movies all over that are resurfacing all over Instagram, TikTok of employees saying that they have quality control issues. And then the FAA is doing a big investigation here, and they're going to allegedly, and let's remember, innocent until proven guilty. The FAA reviewed Boeing 737 factory near Seattle, which I passed a couple of years ago, and gave the company failing grades on nearly three dozen aspects of production. The company has until late May to give the FAA a plan of improvement. In the meantime, the federal agency is limiting the production. So, I mean, they got problems here with this. And let's remember, right? Let's remember here with this. I think it's number four. So context drives behavior. I'm having a hard time seeing what the context is, and that's what I'm interested in. It's one thing to do something wrong, of course, and I'm not giving excuses for doing things wrong. But what is the context of what Boeing is doing here? Why? No, I'm interested in why this is the way it is. How did this evolve? Now, we know that employees are are incentivized to do certain behaviors often. It could be any number of incentives from a supervisor, just from conditions and things. And what they need to do, in my opinion, is figure out you didn't put that on right, and you're a bad employee, and shame on you. I know that that's usually how this is handled. And you hear this other stuff. I've heard of the news. Hey, shame on him. He wasn't doing it. What's wrong with that bleeping factory? Blah, blah, blah. Well, there's a lot of stuff that goes on. I know our friends over there at Coast to Coast AM did a very extensive report on Boeing 737 MAX. Let's just say, I'll let them speak for themselves. It was eye-opening on how why they do what they did. Competition from other people caused them, one of the theories is caused them to cut corners rather than come up with a new airline to go and modify the 737 MAX. That one theory. A couple of other theories were that they cut quality control people. Many, many different theories on this. So going out and just blaming the worker and blaming, the factory and the blah, 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 not really effective. It really doesn't mean anything. We're more interested in how did this evolve? What exactly is going on? And then on top of that, what are we going to do to fix this? And are we going to add, right? What's safety? It's capacity, your ability to do stuff, and resilience, your ability to change, your ability to be resilient, to adjust and things. So what exactly is going on here? I know that they got good people working on this, at least one really good person looking at this here. But anyway, I hope they find out what's going on, because I tell you what, we don't need Boeing to go out of business here. Now, I'm looking at here, I came across a story on, I know it's clickbait, Bored Panda, right? It's been called clickbait here. Men who joined Alpha Male Project mocked online. A 75-hour personal growth experience titled I'm not going to name it. It's making rounds on social media after a clip showed a sneak peek of one of its peculiar sessions. The company is aimed at the men who want to live a life filled with fulfillment, purpose, financial freedom, and have a deep love, loving family, deep loving relationship with their family, end quote, according to their official official site. But not all men are expected to enroll. An attention sign that appears multiple times on the website states the course is designed only for entrepreneurs, executives, and leaders who are ready for a serious breakthrough. And this is like one of those boot camp things, 18 grand, right? And it's yelling and screaming, and it's like a stereotypical military movie. I wasn't in the military, so I don't know how realistic any of this stuff is compared to what a boot camp experience is. And what I find is this, and as we get older and I look back and reflect, I'm not talking about going back and reflecting on things and then obsessing about them. But you say, look, what did I learn from that situation, and how could I have handled that better, and how could I move forward in a better way? And what I always find out is, at least with everybody who I know in the safety field who has had issues with this, no backbone, right? No backbone. Why do I have no backbone? Most people are not articulate enough, and I'm one of them originally, to go and face things and confront people. Remember, these managers are usually going to be 40s, 50s. You're a 22, 23 year old person. How are you you don't have the savvy often to go and handle these people. You can't just go and tell people to go bleep themselves. You have to develop the vocabulary, the arguments, and everything else that you need to do that. And that's part of what the mission of Safety Wars is to give you that quote-unquote ammunition, give you that information, how to articulate and how to have a little bit of a backbone. It's not necessary to go through here and get yelled at and go through the military and blah, 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 blah. Just all this other stuff. Spend all this money. Hey, if you want to send me 18 grand, send me 18 grand. Right? But just email me at jim@safetywars.com. I'll send you a payment link. We'll talk. Maybe I give you a little discount. But just to be more assertive here. And for years, that's what I did. I learned to be more assertive with people. One of the things is, and I was on an early podcast, you have to have everything planned out, what you're going to say. These are the situations that I'm faced with. How am I going to handle them? And of course, as Mike Tyson knows, a plan is only good until you get punched in your mouth, right? Okay, great. But you got to have things planned out ahead of time. That's my way of handling these situations. So when things come up, now you can tell them you can do that, I don't know. It seems here are some of the comments. Is there anything less alpha than paying another man to scream at you? Right. Another person agreed, right? And this is like someone taking a comedy class because they want to become a comedian. I don't know with this. I don't know. Just go out and do your own research here and everything else out there. Hey, Jay, I see you liked my broadcast here. So that's Jay Allen checking in there. Yes, I broke the fourth wall. We're going to go and take a little break here. I'm going to set up for the next series of stories here. We're going to move mosey on over to OSHA.com to check out some of their news releases. Over to OSHA.com and check out some of their news.
kosher avoidables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Kozel, What's Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
Okay, I just, let me, hold on. A lot of moving parts here, right? I have all these buttons. And yes, I will be, we will be changing our software here in the very near future. And upping our production here. So this is Region 2 News I have here on the share screen. And what's our first story? U.S. Department of Labor investigation of workers' confined space fatality finds Oklahoma City area contractor ignored federal safety measures. An Oklahoma City employer's failure to follow federal safety procedures left a 30-year-old worker suffering fatal asphyxiation as they tried to make repairs inside a water tank at a McLean County well site in September 2023. Responding to the report of a fatality in Purcell, investigators with OSHA determined the worker had entered a permit-required confined space, fixed a leaking bulkhead valve in a production tank, and then lost consciousness. Now, what were some of the things here? OSHA issued a CNM, well, issued the company 16 serious citations that and $103,000 in fines. So let's scroll through here. We have the thing. Now, the question here is going to be this. Is this a general industry or is this a construction situation? It could go either way. Had they followed either, and I'm assuming that they did not follow or something went wrong here, either one of those regulations would have likely mitigated this situation or might have prevented it, right? Allegedly, according to OSHA. Let's see what they cited them for. Citation one, item one. Protective equipment was not provided when necessary, whenever hazards capable of causing injury and impairment were encountered. Since 2010, I'm saying this, not the report, it has been the blanket policy of OSHA that if you're working in the petrochemical industry, oil refineries, oil terminals, process area, things of that nature, a lot of different chemical plants, you got to wear fire retardant clothing, and that's appropriate to what you're doing. The one is the NFPA 2112 clothing. A lot of times, I'm going to be honest with you, people don't do that. There are workarounds on here that people get cued on. So, for example, and it's you go on to Facebook, to any of these refining groups out there on Facebook, and what you find out is the, pardon me, there, I had to scratch my head here. What we find out is that people go on to eBay and they buy labels that say fire retardant clothing. And then they go out and they get, and they say NFPA 2112. And then they go out and they sew them into their regular clothes. I've seen that. And they say, look, it's NFPA, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, not so fast there. I don't think that a shirt you bought at a department store in town is, no, it's fire retardant. Well, of course it is. So, no. By the way, that's what might have happened here with that. And if you're a safety professional in the safety field at a oil refinery, that's what you need to look out for. 1910-132. This was another one, a repeat 6452. No, duplicate, I should say. Citation one, item three, another duplicate. Citation one, item four, another duplicate. Okay, so there, OSHA is considering this part maintenance. Now, they cited them under the general industry regulation for permit required confined spaces, 29 CFR 1910-146C1. The employer did not evaluate the workplace to determine if any spaces were permit required confined spaces. So they did not do that. It was exposed to a hazard of asphyxiation. That sounds like it was oxygen deficient at that point. It's 29 CFR 1910-146. When the employer decided that its employees would enter permit spaces, the employer did not develop or implement a written plan. No written plan. Another $6,452. Citation 1-7. The employer did not identify and evaluate hazards. $6,452 fine. Citation 1-8, the under the permit required confined space program required by OSHA, right? 1910-146C4. The employer did not provide at cost, at no cost to the employees testing and monitoring equipment needed to comply with the regulation. So there was no air monitoring equipment, $6,452. I can tell you what, man died here, right? The cost of this equipment doing the right thing was a hell of a lot less than what they're getting fined here for. And that's notwithstanding the death of an employee. My question is are the people in charge going to get, are they going to get convicted of anything here? Usually, no. This was New York. Someone would be going to jail. Under the permit required confined space program required in 29 CFR 1910-146, no ventilation equipment, $6,452. Citation 1-10, the employer did not develop and implement procedures for summoning rescue and emergency services. Right, no rescue, $6,452. 1910-146, no permit, no entry permit, $6,400 again. And citation 1-12, serious, no training, $6,452. And we're almost done. These are all $6,452 until I say otherwise. No training again for, that established employee proficiency. Citation 1-14. Again, same thing, a duplicate, $6,400. Number 15, no training. Again, same thing. Employer did not ensure that all authorized entrants knew the hazards that could be faced during entry. Another $6,400 for a grand total of $103,000 in proposed penalties, $232. I know, all easily preventable here. I just got a call today on trench safety. U.S. Department of Labor investigation finds a Houston area contractor ignored federal safety measures in teenager's trench collapse death. The Houston area contractor's willful disregard. I think this is going to be a lot of money here. Contributed to an 18-year-old worker fatality when a 15-foot trench wall collapsed on him in September 2023. OSHA cited the company for failing to use an adequate protective system and to safeguard employees from potentially deadly collapse at another work site in Katy, continuing a history of workplace safety failures that includes 8 OSHA citations for not providing the required protective systems after another fatality in January 2007. So let's see what we got here. And we're scrolling on down here. Again, everyone's innocent until proven guilty, and these are proposed penalties. They may be litigated, negotiated, vacated, and all the other aided, right? So this one, I'm surprised with this one. Rarely do we ever get to see this one. 29 CFR 1926-50. In the absence of an infirmary, clinic, hospital, or physician that was reasonably accessible in terms of time and distance to the worksite, which was available for the treatment of injured employees. A person who has a valid certificate in first aid CPR, first aid training, I mean CPR here, training from blah, 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 that can be verified by documentary evidence, was not available at the worksite to render first aid. $16,000 fine, almost. Serious. No safe means of egress. Another $16,000 almost. Citation item 3. Water, accumulated water, and no adequate protection. Almost $16,000. Citation 1, item 4. On or about, blah, 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 at the worksite, employees are exposed to cavement hazards while working in an excavation more than 5 foot deep when reinforced concrete boxes were used as shielding system without the manufacturer's specifications, recommendations, and limitations. If you have a trench box, you got to have your paperwork together. Shields were not installed in a manner to restrict lateral or other hazardous movement of a shield in the event of the application of sudden lateral loads, meaning side to side. We had this come up on LinkedIn the other day. $16,000. Employees were not protected from the hazards of cave-ins. Another $16,000. Here we have willful. Each employee in the excavation was not protected from cave-ins by an adequate protective system. $159,710. Citation 3, item 1. They did not have the injury and illnesses records within 4 hours of their request. No OSHA 300 log. $2,281 for a grand total of $257,811. Okay, we covered that story last week. U.S. Department of Labor joins industry leaders and stakeholders to stress workplace safety during Stand Up for Green Safety Week, March 25th to 29th. My commentary last week on this was this. All right, we're going to go to the OSHA website here. All right, let's navigate a little bit. We're going to go over to standards, laws, and regulations. So if you're listening on the radio show, we're going through this. We have general industry. Look at the extent of these standards here for general industry. I'm scrolling down and down and down and down. Wow, a lot of stuff going on there. How about construction? We're going to scroll down and down and down. Look at all of them on this. We're scrolling down. Now let's go over to agriculture. How many rules are there in agriculture? There it is. Doesn't even take up one page. Maybe there's, and you know, okay, so, well, Jim, a lot of that stuff from 1910 is applicable to agriculture. Yeah, okay. Here we have those. Another almost, no, a little bit over a page here. So here's my question on all of this stuff here. Maybe there's a problem with the way that they regulate this stuff. No, you know, it's one thing to say, well, hey, you know, the stress, workplace safety, but then you go to the agriculture regs and there's nothing going on there. I don't know, maybe I'm bleeped up here. Maybe rather than, you know, talking about landscapers in Region 2, which is important. Landscapers in Region 2 get hurt. Rather having that as a focus, why isn't OSHA going out and issuing regulations with the on these people, on the agricultural workers, those businesses? A lot of them are family-owned, and they're exempt from OSHA regulations. I get it. But it's kind of like this. With this, it's sort of like human organizational performance and behavior-based safety, the whole debate and blaming workers. No, they gotta work a lot. They gotta be safer. They gotta go with safety. All right, and we have all this other stuff: safety, safety, safety. And then you go there, and they have like no regulations here. very limited. Well, the gym, they're covered by the general duty clause. Okay, great. They got to go and they got to prove the employer failed to keep the workplace free of a hazard that an employee was exposed. The hazard was recognized. The hazard was causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm, and there was a feasible and useful method to correct the hazard every time. A little bit high of a high bar that they have to meet here for OSHA. But it's like this. It's like, you know, you should work safely and be more safe and blah, 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 blah. Right? But hey, we're going to come up with a nice thing here. We're going to stress worker safety, and we're going to have, oh, you know, stand up for Green Safety Week, blah, blah, blah. And we're okay. And no, it's to remind agricultural industry employers and workers of potentially deadly hazards. Well, if they're so freaking deadly, why aren't you regulating them more strictly? My question there, and I'll answer my own question. Votes. That's why. Yep, all comes down to votes. Yes, this is Safety Wars, and I am going to, you know, I am going to point this out. Now, this is a little bit of a follow-up of a story that we had covered last year, because this is a local here. I actually went down to the where this actually happened, where these things, accidents happened. And I, you know, it was one of them was a development, and one of the guys says to me, not the workers, but and they said, well, what are you looking at? No, obviously, you know, you see somebody had to drop at there. So, well, do you know that you guys made the news this week with OSHA? They're like, no, what do you mean? I said, well, this company, they got, you know, 687,000 proposed penalty from OSHA and potential criminal stuff for, no. Did you know that? No, we didn't know that. I said, well, maybe your homeowners association should know that. And a contractor working here that did this, because you might be liable for that. I would have to check with Dawn Becker on that one. Dawn Becker was a guest here, high up in the insurance industry, specializing in homeowners association insurance. Basically, according to her, and now, you know, she said it on the program, so I think I can say it here. Most places are underinsured. New York Roofing Company withdraws contest notice after vigorous litigation by Department of Labor affirming egregious willful citations. Vigorous litigation by the U.S. Department of Labor has convinced a New York Roofing Company to stop contesting the egregious, willful, and other citations it received, and the $687,536 penalty assessed after 2022 workplace safety investigation at a Hohokus. That's, yes, that is the name of the town, Hohokus worksite. And again, the company filed a notice of withdrawal with the Independent Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission. The Spring Valley-based companies, that's right down the street here, company's action came 1 week before a scheduled trial litigated by the Department's Office of Solicitor in New York. As a result, the commission has affirmed the citations issued by the department's OSHA, including three per instance egregious willful fall protection violations, a willful unsafe ladder violation, four serious violations, and their related penalties. The action follows an August 2022 OSHA inspection at a residential construction site where a compliance officer observed multiple employees working on a steep slope roof without fall protection. I mean, these things are freaking huge. Took like five stories in the air. All right. And they found a whole bunch of stuff. This incident led company founder and principal, I'll mention his name because he did plead guilty, Jose Lima, plead guilty in February 2024 to criminal charges filed by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York in July 2023. So, what was that? I mean, this is a rarity for someone to get convicted and by the feds here. And Scott, what do they plead guilty to? Let's see. This is from the United States Attorney's Office. This will be our last story for today, probably. Jose Lima, Jose Lima, and I can't pronounce that name, the founder and principal of blah, 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 a New York roofing company, pled guilty to willfully violating the Occupational Safety Health Administration regulations resulting in the death of an employee in New York, in New Square. New Square, you go out here and you make a right and go a mile, that's New Square. On or about February 8th, 2022. So this is all related to the original thing, and they did a follow-up inspection here. According to statements, let's see, what did he get? Okay. Here it is. I'm sorry for the pause. Blah, blah, blah is charged from one count of willful violation of OSHA regulations resulting in death, which carries a maximum sentence of 6 months in prison and maximum fine of $250,000. Maximum potential penalties in this case are prescribed by Congress. So even if he, you know, he pled guilty, up to 6 months in jail, $250,000 fine. I'm sorry, slap on the wrist. Slap on the wrist. Especially since the company has been inspected 10 times by OSHA and has had multiple fall-related violations. I don't know. It's very frustrating here. Speaking to a colleague of mine, and he said, look, Jim, I am leaving the safety business because things have not gotten better, and I've been in it for 35 years. We get very little support in a lot of this stuff. Later this week, we're going to have a special program on some of this. I wrote it last week. Didn't get have a chance to present it. On what some of the stuff, some we're getting back to basics, back to what we were on this. Right, because we have new listeners all the time and everything else. But let's go back to basics on all this stuff here on how to handle people, how to manage people, how to identify problems. And that's what we're going to do here. I don't know how much time we have here. Okay. We have about 2 minutes, so we're going to go with one more commercial break, and then we're going to go to our outro. I will see you, God willing, tomorrow. Good night.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.